Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Twenty-nine-year-old Misha Miyamoto lives alone in the house her grandmother left her. She has held the same job since high school, and she likes her life as it is, simple. Unfortunately, her own satisfaction disappoints everyone around her. Her boss can't fathom why she won't take a promotion, her lack of ambition dissuades potential love interest, and with no interest in starting a family, her parents push her to sell the house. The film is called Chaperone. It has been playing in film festivals around the country, including an upcoming screening at the Mill Valley Film Festival on October 6th and 7th. We're joined today by the writer and director of Chaperone, Zoe Eisenberg. Zoe, welcome to Film School Radio.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
It's a fascinating story, very well told, terrific cast. What inspired you to make Chaperone?
When I was 29 years old, a high school kid mistook me for a fellow teenager and asked me out to a house party. And immediately I was like, I'm old and I'm married and this is awkwardly flattering, but I don't think that's going to happen. And we both laughed about it. It was awkward for both of us and parted ways. But afterwards, I kind of became obsessed with this question. You know, what kind of woman wouldn't have corrected his error? What kind of woman would have found that this opportunity was the most appealing one that she had in her life at the time? So I kind of became really obsessed with who this woman would be. And that led me to create Misha. And she's quite different from me, but that inciting incident remains the same. And we went from there.
Over the years, we've certainly seen stories like this, the older woman, the younger man. And oftentimes, and it's the case here, where it's really about the performance, it's about the acting. The story itself is very compelling, but it's whether or not you believe what is happening to be feasible. And I thought that Mitzi Akahai did a wonderful job in terms of being able to embody just the sensibility that you just described, being able to make it work. And I thought that the performance was nuanced, and I thought that she was just terrific in this role. Also, I noticed that over the course of the film, her look would often change from someone who looked close to her late 20s. And then there'd be other times when you would see her and she looked very young. She looked like she could be 18 or 19 years old. I'm sure in some way it was intentional, but I thought you did a wonderful job. Let's talk about the intentionality of how you shot her.
Yeah, I mean, the way that we style her hair, the way that we dress her, you know, all impacts how we're perceiving age. Yeah, those things were intentional.
We talked about this in the introduction, but in getting a handle on just where Misha is in her life, she is happy for the most part, it feels like, where she is and what she's doing. Doesn't seem to be very ambitious, but there's some uncertainty about that. Is that a fair description of her?
You know, I think that Misha does know where she wants to be. And I think where she wants to be is pretty much exactly where she is, except for what she's looking for is acceptance from the people around her. And I think that, you know, we live in a really ambitious culture where we're constantly focused on progression and forward movement. And again, this is where I differ from Misha and where the actress Mitzi differed from her character as well. Artists tend to be highly ambitious people. But Misha's character isn't, you know, she's the auntie that you might know who's been bagging your groceries for 25 years and loves showing up for work every day and loves what she's contributing to the community and loves seeing the same people. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And so that is where Misha is when we find her. She is happy with her work, you're right, doesn't want any more responsibility. She is very privileged to be living in a home that was passed down to her. Most of us do not have that luxury of not having to worry about our cost of living. That impacts her stasis greatly, but you know, she feels good about where she is, but nobody else in her life sees that in her until she meets Jake. And I think that is his main appeal.
Is that he spurs her interest of something beyond where she is? Is that...
No, he thinks she's great. Of course, the sad irony is here is that he doesn't understand that she's, you know, about to turn 30. He thinks that she's, you know, 18 years old, just like he is. So he thinks she's really cool for an 18-year-old. But she's living quite a delusion where she thinks, you know, that maybe that lie of omission doesn't matter. And he really sees the real her. And that feels so good to not feel this pressure to be more than she is, that she really can't bring herself to shatter that.
Speaking of Jake, let's talk a little bit about his performance. Laird Akio plays Jake. Let's talk about the performance. I thought he was terrific. Again, an easy charm to him. In some ways, he acts and behaves with confidence that belie that of an 18-year-old. And I think that dynamic really works because in some ways, Misha is playing younger than she is, and he's playing a little bit older than he is. How would you describe Jake?
I think that Laird is I keep referring them to him as my actors' names because I know them so well. Jake is a very good guy. You know, he cares about school. He cares about his family, which is mostly his mom. He was raised by a single mom. He cares about his friends. And those are kind of the three main lanes that he's in because he's 18, 19 years old, right? So those are his... those are his focuses, which are very similar to Misha's focuses. You know, she doesn't have school, but she has her job. She cares about that. She cares about her family. She cares about her cat. That's kind of it.
And they have a loving relationship with one another. They're good with each other. And what you said, there is this kind of bit pressure from coming from people in her life.
The sad thing about their connection is, of course, you know, their age gap isn't really that vast in the grand scheme of things. What is vast is where they are in life, to be a working adult out of school for 10 years and someone in school. And then of course her lie of omission. So if in the film, in their inciting incident, Misha had done what I had done, which was, hey, I'm almost 29 or I'm almost 30. And Jake had said, cool, that doesn't bother me. I still think you're great. They might have still had a relationship, but it wouldn't really have been much to tell a story about.
I thought the film did a very effective job of identifying Misha's universe and the people in it, and you gave them some backstories and some interactions with her that helped define her character as well as understanding her world. And so congratulations on that. Let's talk a little bit about the way you went about developing these characters in the film.
I tend not to bring a great sense of judgment to my characters when I write them. You know, it's like when a good friend tells you a secret and you love them about a shitty thing they've done and you love them anyway. That's the acceptance that I bring just naturally to the page. Like that's been pointed out to me. It isn't something that I realized I was doing or something that I intentionally do, but that does allow me to paint situations from a more objective perspective where you can root for the character because you see the goodness in them and you see that they're trying, but you also see when they're making mistakes.
By the way, we're talking about the film Chaperone, and it is going to be playing at the Mill Valley Film Festival on October 6th and 7th. Are you going to be out for that? Are you going to be there?
Well, I will be there at both screenings, and I will also be sitting on a panel, the Mind the Gap panel of female filmmakers.
Fantastic. So look for it there. A website for people to be directed to.
We are on social media, so we're on Instagram at Chaperone Film Hawaii. That's the easiest way to kind of track our progress.
That's great. Also, the film did very well earlier in the year at the Slamdance Film Festival. Let's talk about that. I've been to Slamdance a couple of times. I think it's a terrific film festival, especially for filmmakers. It's so intimate. You get a chance to actually sit down often with the filmmakers. So talk about that award that you won.
Yeah, that was so. Our premiere was at Slamdance. That was a very surreal experience for me to be invited to a larger festival. I've been making films for 10 years, but very, very indie. And while Slamdance is very, very indie, it's like the top of the very, very indie, you know, game. So when they called me to tell me that I had been accepted, there was a gap of maybe 4 days before I got any follow up, and I was like, I think it was a punk. Like, was somebody punking me and telling me that this happened, and that, but luckily it was real. And then we went, and there was a lot of buzz around the film, which just happened, you know, well, we had a great publicist, so there was that. But also, you know, sometimes it just happens naturally for films as well. And yeah, we won their breakout award, which is their award for second time feature filmmakers. So it's kind of, again, the biggest dream that I can have as someone who identifies as perpetual indie underdog.
Well, congratulations on that award. Yes, Peter Baxter, one of the founders, has been on the program a number of times and always loved to promote any of the work coming out of Slamdance, because it is, yeah, just as you described it, it is truly, truly an independent film festival in that regard to the people that are involved and also to the filmmakers who are there. What's the film community like in Hawaii? What is it a, would you call a vibrant community of filmmakers, or how is it in Hawaii to make a film?
It is very vibrant, and it's been really growing for the last 10 years. You know, again, we're islands in the middle of nowhere, so our resources are finite. And it used to be that we would, you know, export not only our pineapples, but our most talented people. So it used to be that if you wanted to work in the film industry, you know, you would go to school and then you would leave. But right now there is this resurgence. I mean, it's really a reclamation of stories being told here. And people both in the Native Hawaiian community and in the Kama'aina community, the people that just live here like myself, but call it home, wanting to make sure that the stories that are being told here are told by the people who are either born here or have some kind of serious investment into the community, so they understand the importance of accurately portraying the community. Because so often when films come in here to shoot, Hawaii is a backdrop, its people are a backdrop. And so there is a really nice boom in our community here of filmmakers who are now, you know, coming of age. They started as student filmmakers and now they're professional and they're making their own work. And so we're getting to see more of the real Hawaii shown on screen, which is beautiful.
And you see that in the cast as well.
Yes, yes, definitely. All of our actors have some tie to Hawaii, you know, Laird, Kanoa. We're born here. People like Mitzi has family here, but lives in New York. Krista, family here, but lives in California. So everyone has roots here.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, congratulations. And you're talking about your career as an underdog independent filmmaker. And now this film is getting a wide showing with Mill Valley's one of the really terrific film festivals. There's another one that I've been to, and a very impressive film festival. What an amazing community. Also, by the way, in case you are listening to our conversation, check out Mill Valley and that area. It's really nice, but it's a great film festival too. So
I'm really excited to be there.
Well, what are you taking away from the success so far for Chaperona? Are you writing something? Are you involved in the next project?
Yeah, I'm always writing. I mean, I'm first and foremost a writer. I came into directing later. I actually had my first novel published this year. It's also set in Hilo, where Chaperone takes place. And it's also about a woman making shitty decisions. So that seems to be my motif. So that came out from HarperCollins earlier this year. So it's called Significant Others. It's been a really big year for me.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations. And I'm going to guess you're also scripting and or in the middle of probably, are you producing anything right now? Are you in the midst of it?
I'm writing two different projects for other local directors to direct, which is nice for me to sort of, you know, take a little bit of time off from directing myself as I sort of ruminate what my next project will be as a director. But I'm getting to write for other people, which I love. So right now I'm working on an adaptation of a Christiana Kahakuvila short story. She's a really phenomenal Hawaiian writer out here. And it's a revenge family drama set in the world of cockfighting, which is very culturally significant, as well as taboo subject matter out here because it's not legal. So again, with the motif of shitty decisions being made by well-meaning women.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds fascinating. That's truly fascinating. Well, congratulations on all of this. It's it's a wonderful film. Again, the acting is really good, and I really like the story. I really like the trajectory of the characters in the film. I thought all of those things were done exceptionally well. And well deserved on your on the accolades the film is receiving. So.
You know, when we were developing the chaperone story, my producer, Allison, who was, you know, the first person on this project other than myself, she's been on it for 5 years. We were looking at this story as, you know, what if Mrs. Robinson had been told from the perspective of Mrs. Robinson? Because I love that film. And as a fiction writer, I also love the book. But Mrs. Robinson is a much more interesting character than Benjamin Braddock. And so we really, that's how we started looking at the story. It obviously grew from there. But that was a really interesting way to inform my choices.
You know, I love that observation, and you're absolutely right. I mean, that really, yes, what you said, it is Mrs. Robinson is the dynamic character in that film. Absolutely.
And that story is very much about our culture's focus on ambition, because that really is what Benjamin Braddock is suffering from, is not wanting to be like his parents, wanting to buck his parents' expectations. And that ends up impacting the lives of all the people that he interacts with.
By the way, I was looking for the film that I was trying to recall. It was called Waikiki. It was Christopher.
Christopher. He's wonderful. Yeah.
A really solid film. That was excellent. Filmed, I believe, mostly in Honolulu, is my recollection. And great cast. Well, I mean, it's great to see. It's great to see because, again, as you know, sort of Hawaii. What's happening over there? But it's good. Great to see that you and Christopher and others are a part of a vibrant film community. So, Zoe, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike. I really am happy to be here on the show with you.
Oh, great. Again, the film is called Chaperone, and we've been joined today by the director and writer, and that would be Zoe Eisenberg. Zoe, thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.